most of the guys that I would date, we would go Dutch. And so they would recommend a really nice restaurant, and I would pull up the menu on the internet and be like, how about a picnic?
Sorry.
It didn't change the frequency with which I dated, but it did really change the dates that I had.
Hey everybody. Oh my God, it's 2018. Technically, I recorded this in 2017, but by the time you get to listen to this episode, we will be in the new year. And the number one topic, my number one focus for 2018 for both myself, my listeners, and the readers of my website, Michelle is Money Hungry, is a focus on abundance. I want people to have abundance in terms of actual cash money, abundance and savings, abundance of love, health, and wealth. And this guest, I had the pleasure of meeting very briefly, but hearing speak on a panel at a new event that I attended that a friend of mine put together called the Lola Retreat. It will be held in New York City this year, but for its inaugural year, it was held in Portland, Oregon, which actually is a very weird city with some of the best food I've ever had. Anyway, I digress. I connected with this guest during a panel on financial independence. So right now, a lot of people are talking about becoming financially independent, retiring early. And I love this mindset and idea. But what I noticed was that every time I saw a panel, no one looked like me. And that was kind of frustrating because I was like, do people of color, like, do they end up financially independent? Like, is that even a reality? Intuitively, I knew that it was. But I think that there's a lot to be said about seeing people who are doing the things that you want to achieve. So I knew immediately that I had to have this guest on the show. It was an emotional thing for me to hear her talk about her story, even talking about it now, introing, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get a little emotional here. The other thing I want to say is, when people talk about financial independence, you get a lot of the stories about, well, I was 32, and to be fair, she's 32. But I think that I want to encourage you, regardless of age, to focus on this. You get all the stories about people who are super young doing this, but that's only because they have the benefit of technology, really. If you are in your 40s, if you're in your 30s, if you're in your 50s, please remember that you probably have a heck of a lot of life to live moving forward. So maybe you spend 5 to 8 years focusing on becoming financially independent. But then you have 30 plus years of life to live. Like, think about that. So maybe you're not 22 and retiring at 28, but maybe you still have years of life to live where you're not beholden to, quote unquote, the man. So with that being said, I'm about to introduce the guest. Don't forget to grab the Unapologetically Money Hungry Money Manifesto. Yes, I created a money manifesto because I went there. I'm so extra. I just feel like it's important to own your personal finance vision. It's important to own the fact that you want to bring more money / abundance into your life. Broke people can't help other people because they're broke and it's stressful for them. How do I know that? Because I've lived that life and I do not want to do that anymore. And I don't want that for you. So there you go. Sylvia, I am so excited to have you on the show. That was a long intro. Everyone, welcome Sylvia Hall. I know you guys aren't in the room with us because we are technically in two very different rooms in two different states, but Sylvia Hall is my guest. And if you could share a little bit about yourself, let's get started.
Thanks for having me. That was quite the introduction. I did go through a similar path as you, from broke to now being technically financially independent. My name is Sylvia Hall. I'm an attorney in Seattle. I've been practicing for about 10 years now. And I love what you said about it doesn't matter how old you are. You just have to get started. You just have to take that first step. And being financially independent gave me the motivation and the courage to actually start my own firm, which I've been operating since January 1st of 2017. So I've got about a year in the book, but I never would have been able to do it without becoming financially independent. And I never would have been able to become financially independent without sort of the groundswell of the community that's now taken off. So I was a little later than some of the more famous bloggers and people with websites when I hit FI, but it's better late than never, and it's never too late to start.
I would love for you to share kind of your backstory and that moment when you were like, this isn't working for me anymore. Did you have debt? Kind of walk us through the beginning.
Okay, so I came out of undergrad and I was lucky enough to escape undergrad without any debt. But then, because I was a philosophy major,
you were a philosophy major?
I was a little bit of an everything major. So technically, I had a double major in philosophy and political science. And then I ended up with a minor in German and economics. Fueled by a junior year abroad. So that's where the German came in. And
sorry. Was your family like, what is happening?
My family has been saying that on a regular basis for years now. I just kind of decided I wanted to get really into German philosophy. So I up and moved to Germany without speaking any German. But, you know, trial by fire, I came back speaking German. But they've been having several head-scratching moments with me since moving to Germany for a couple of years and then deciding that I was going to retire early. So they've been in constant head-scratching mode. I went to law school, and when I came out of law school, I had 6 figures worth of debt. And I kind of lived my life before that by, okay, go to school, work hard, make good grades, go to graduate school, which was law school for me. And so I always kind of stayed in school, made good grades, and then graduated from law school with 6 figures worth of debt, about a 6 month grace period before I was going to have to start paying that all back. And I realized for the first time that there was no next step that was ingrained. And so for the first time, I was done with school. I had a job, thankfully, but I had no idea what to do with money. I knew just kind of intrinsically, okay, spend less than you make, but there was no further guidance. And that was before the FI community kind of took off in the blogosphere. So there was no natural source to go to. So the first thing I did was figure out who I needed to pay back my loans to. So that took a lot of sorting through paperwork. And after I was able to start paying back my student loans, I did it the old-fashioned way and went to the library and basically checked out every book I could on, okay, you've got a job, now what? Most of the books were by people like David Bach with The Automatic Millionaire or Susie Orman. Nothing that was really tailored to a younger set. Everything was more like, you know, invest in your 401k, and when you're 65, you'll be able to retire. And so not bad advice, but I knew after practicing law for a couple of years that, wow, I don't want to be doing this at 65. Wow. I've been fortunate enough to have loved all my jobs and all my coworkers, but once you start having to bill hours, for me at least, I knew that it wasn't something I wanted to be doing 40 years down the road. No disrespect to people who have been doing it for 40 years.
But where was this notion of financial independence and the accelerated financial independence? You're researching all this stuff. None of it's talking about retiring early. So what gave you this idea that you could retire early, if you know, or become financially independent early? Like, what, I'm trying to figure out what it was. Was it just years into paying off the debt? You're like, yeah, well, you know, I could do this other thing too. I'm trying to figure out what was that moment.
Yeah, so the first moment I hit was, I want to get out of debt. And so I threw everything I could into getting out of debt. And so then it became a debt sort of snowball. And so I did something a little bit different. So I paid off all my private loans. That took about 2 years. I'm keeping my federal loans forever because they're locked at, they're fixed at 1.6% interest. Mm-hmm. And so after I got rid of the private loan debt, everything that I had been using to accelerate my private loan debt payoff went to maxing out my 401k. And then anything extra I had went to, So the first thing I did was max out a Roth IRA, then max out my 401k. And when I found that I had a little bit left, I went to for a taxable account. So it, there wasn't really a concept of financial independence and early retirement for me until I'll say maybe 2010, 2011 is when I started seeing that terminology. But for me, it became get out of debt, save everything you can. And then it just morphed into, wow, okay, if I have 25 times savings, then maybe I can even think about retirement. Or if I have 33 times savings, I can think about retirement. So there wasn't a clear concept of financial independence and early retirement. For me, it started off with throwing everything I could at debt, taking that same money and making sure I didn't give into lifestyle inflation and saving all of that money. And then by virtue of reading all those books at the library about safe withdrawal rates of 4% and everything basically said, once you have anywhere from 25 to 33 times your annual expenses, at that point, you can technically retire. Again, all of that literature was designed for people who were 65. And I remember I used to religiously watch Susie Orman's show on Saturdays, and she always had this "Can I afford it?" "Can I retire?" segment. And she told everybody, no, you have to work until 70. So it didn't really sink in that you can retire early. So for me, I was just focused on hitting that number of 25 times expenses. But it wasn't until more prolific bloggers like Mad Scientist, Mr. Money Mustache came along that I was able to actually put the name or the concept of, no, you hit that number, you walk away. You don't have to keep working until you're 65. So it wasn't until about 2011, 2012, where that concept actually took root. Before then, it was just sort of reverse engineering the safe withdrawal rate. So my goal was just to get anywhere from 25 to 33 times annual expenses saved.
What was the financial conversation like in your family? Did you grow up with parents who talked about saving for retirement and not getting into debt? And what was that financial conversation as a kid? For me, I'm going to be honest, like I learned to work hard and to be ethical and to be a great employee. But no one ever talked to me about saving or staying out of debt, or that wasn't part of the conversation. It wasn't because they wouldn't have valued that. It just was that in my family, that just didn't come up.
Yeah, it absolutely never came up in my family. I think there are two reasons for that. One, in my family, I think there's an association of working with pride and working with contributing to society, which I have no problem with. But there's also the flip side of that where not working is seen as lazy and what are you doing? So there was never really a drive to stop working before, you know, you reached traditional retirement age. And I think the second reason why is the retirement landscape was significantly different for my parents. My mom worked for AT&T and put in 35 years there, qualified for a pension. And that was always what she understood was going to be the cornerstone of her retirement, with, you know, eventually getting Social Security and maybe a little bit of personal savings. So for my parents, it was really pensions, putting, you know, 30 plus years on the job in Social Security that was, you know, carrying the lion's share of retirement. Whereas for me, I've always operated under the assumption that Social Security either won't be there to the extent that, you know, I run on the calculator. So I just never even took Social Security into account in pension. What's that?
It's funny because I'm a Gen Xer, so I'm older than you, and I never thought that I would have Social Security. But it never, as much as I was educating myself about money, I had so many bad habits because I'd never had any good ones that it's taken me since I started blogging about money about 5 years to kill all the bad habits so I could even have a foundation to build good habits on. So that's been a very humbling experience. So I'm wondering, were you the kid in the family who was always pretty diligent about your money, and were you the one saving in your piggy bank, and how were you as a kid with money?
I was not always that kid. I think I was naturally frugal, and I think one of the benefits I had is I've always been like a delayed gratification junkie. So I think that helped, but no, I definitely wanted my Cabbage Patch and Nintendo and love to travel. So I've never been opposed to spending money, but I have always naturally saved money.
I think I'm curious about, actually, I'm wondering, what did it look like when you were actively paying off your debt? How was life? Was it, so I like to ask this question a lot of people who've paid off a lot of debt, because I think other people, especially if they're in the beginning of a debt payment journey, they're concerned that it's a lot of sacrifice in the sense that you don't have a social life. You can't ever have fun. You can't live in the moment. So could you describe what your life was like as you paid off all that debt? And six figures is 100,000 plus. That's a lot of money.
It was a lot. So first thing you have to do is you have to break it up into pieces so you don't curl up in a ball and that you actually do start. So for me, the first two categories were private and federal loans. The federal loans, I was lucky enough to get 1.6% interest, 1.6% interest rate that was fixed. So I just figured, you know what, that's not going to be a priority for me ever. Mm-hmm. So then I was still looking at about 80 grand worth of private student loans. And then you just break it up. You just break it up. For me, it was in $10,000 increments.
Like a year, or how did that?
So I literally had my little thermometer with like 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 checked off. And so if you got a bonus, I also lived with a roommate after graduating from college, from law school, so I could cut down on rent. I didn't have cable, so things weren't really bare bones. It didn't feel like they were bare bones, but I guess looking back, there's a lot more things that I could have paid for. But for me, it was not a matter of sacrificing having fun. You just altered your belief of what fun was. So instead of going out to a bar and spending 10 bucks per drink and hanging out all night, well, you just invite the party over so everyone can just pick up their six pack chips, what have you, and come over and hang out. So you're not looking at a $100 tab at the end of the night. Instead, you've only put in 10 bucks, but hung out with all the people you wanted to hang out with. And so if you can do that, if you can find a way to have people over for movie night, have people over for trivia night, board game night, what have you, just if you can control the cost of your fun, that helps you tremendously. Because once you step into a restaurant or a bar, you're always going to have that friend who forgot his or her wallet. You're always going to have that one extra drink. You're always going to get that one extra thing because you're just out. So by all means, go out every once in a while. But if you can tailor the fun to more hanging out where you can control the cost, that goes a long way.
So you had a social life.
Definitely. Always have a social life. You don't want to look back. Because time is your friend, too, and you'll never be as young as you are now. So you don't want to closet yourself off in you know, just to save money, because money at the end of the day is fungible and it's not the most important thing in life. Your connections, your friendships, your memories are the most important thing, in my opinion. So don't sacrifice those things for the money, because every dollar is the same as every other dollar, but missing out on, you know, connections, you don't get that back. So don't go extreme with it, but just try to make the connections and the hanging out and the fun cost controlled.
So I want to get back to the incremental goals. So was it $10,000 a year you were paying off, or just you had these thermometers that had different increments and you would work towards the first one of $10,000, and maybe you did it in 7 months or 8 months or whatever. And did you have an award for yourself after you hit that first goal? And then did you give yourself a little break before preparing for the next goal?
Yeah, so there was no set timeline initially. I just broke it up that way. So instead of thinking, oh my gosh, I am $100,000 in debt if you include the federal loans, it's like, okay, I'm $10,000 in debt. I can do $10,000. That doesn't keep me up at night all the time.
$100,000 is, woo, Lord.
Right? So it was more like, so I didn't go crazy. I just only looked at it like $10,000. And at the time, it was my first job out of law school. I wasn't making all that much, but I just made it so that, you know, every extra dollar I had, I just threw at it. And so I found that the first 10,000 increment took about a year to hit. But the second $10,000 increment only took about 6 months. You get wow. really creative. Yeah, you get creative with how you pay off the debt, at least for me. And the more you start channeling your social life around more interactions instead of spending money, it becomes contagious. So you go for a run, you go for a walk, you go for a bike ride, you have people over. You have Friday night board games with, you know, you get a keg. And that's a lot cheaper than going to a bar. And full disclosure, I've had the same car since high school. So that helps.
I'm imagining the car's paid off too.
The car is paid off. Yeah. And so after the car was paid off, I was able to drop comprehensive and collision. And then that money went to student loan debt.
Wow. Okay. Now here's a question. As a single person, were you single at the time, and how did it like affect your dating?
I've been single. I've dated guys off and on. Nothing that got extremely serious, but I've always dated. In the first part of the journey to financial independence, it didn't really affect my dating life because it was more of a nebulous concept, and I wasn't as gung-ho about will not spend extra money. So that wasn't my mindset. So the dating was fun, and I was in New Orleans at the time, so there was a ton of stuff to do that wasn't all that expensive. After I moved to Seattle, and Seattle was much more expensive than New Orleans as far as housing and just about everything else, that's when it almost became comical. So, and most of the guys that I would date, we would go Dutch. And so they would recommend a really nice restaurant, and I would pull up the menu on the internet and be like, how about a picnic? So it didn't change the frequency with which I dated, but it did really change the dates that I had.
I'm sorry, that's really funny. You know what? I'm going to say this as an aside. What is this with going Dutch? Like, I'm not pro or anti, but I always offer, but I've never dated guys who've done this Dutch thing. So I'm really? Always... I've never gone Dutch. Like and I always bring money on my dates because I don't trust that something won't happen. So I always have money to pay for both of us. I always pull out the wallet. I'm always happy to pay. Like that is a non-issue. But I have never gone Dutch. So it's like this foreign, weird concept to me. You know, I don't even understand it. But so when you're going Dutch and you're spending my money like that, I sure would tell them, let's go on a picnic.
It's funny because the first date is, it's like I always offer to pay, but I'm not really, I don't know, maybe I'm a bad feminist, but I always offer to pay and I'm always expecting the guy to be like, no, I got it. And then like 50% of the time, it's like, no, we're both throwing down cards.
What so the? I'm so glad I'm a Gen Xer. That's so funny. I don't know why it's so funny.
It becomes a weird inner monologue thing. And I'm like, is it okay that we're splitting this? Or is this like a deal breaker? I didn't offer. Is it wrong that I offered but really didn't think I was going to have to pay? It's like this whole mind thing. But it just became so common that I just anticipated paying, and hence the picnics.
So here's a question about, as you move forward, I'm not trying to be all in your business, but I think people who are in the process of trying to wrap their heads around socializing and dating and things like that, I think the following question is a good one to ask, which is, now that you've paid off a significant amount of money, you've saved a significant amount of money, what are the things that you're looking for in a partner, a potential partner? Like, what are the red flags that you notice besides them trying to spend all your money going Dutch?
The red flags that I notice now are hilarious. When I first started dating, like college and law school, it was more like, okay, you can fog a mirror. Sure, let's go out. Now it's like, there are little telltale signs. Like, it's weird for me. If a guy has a really, really nice car, I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. I'm just weird like that, because I'm like, oh.
No, because you're like, how much is that payment?
Right, and then the insurance. But, I mean, it's not quite that bad. I'm not completely crazy. But the red flags now aren't necessarily that, you know, he's got the best of credit. It's just that he's got a financial plan. So it doesn't really matter to me where he is on that financial journey, as long as he has started on the financial journey, especially here in Seattle, because I mean, housing is so expensive that I don't care if you rent, I don't care if you own a place, just be in the phase where you're not digging anymore. So let's not have a ton of credit card debt that you're just nonchalant about. So I've dated lots of guys who are like, yeah, just throw it on the card. The card is what it is. It's kind of a behemoth on its own. And I'm like, maybe that's not going to work out. But yeah, as long as the guy is cool with going on picnics and like free concerts and free movies.
I think it's hilarious because this is how I live my life. So it's like you're a kindred spirit.
or like happy hour. Like I don't mind. It's hard for me. It was really funny. The last guy I dated, there are a lot of places in Seattle that have happy hours. And some of the places in Seattle that have happy hours, it's happy hour dependent on where you sit in the restaurant.
What?
Yeah, so like if you're on the outside patio, sometimes they don't offer happy hour, whereas if you're in the inside bar, they do. And so I went, and of course I did like the scoping out of the menu. And we ended up on the patio where they didn't offer happy hour. And I just assumed that once we figured that out, we would go to the bar. And he's like, no, let's stay outside. And so in my mind, I was like, wow, this drink is like 50% more because we're sitting outside. But I mean, I got over it, but those are just sort of the now ingrained calculations that I do. But you're I'm not, learning to get over it.
You're really nice, because I would literally be like, Brad, Giovanni, you know, Giovanni, whoever, let's go inside because it's cheaper. I'm like, I would literally be like, dude, like, let's save you some money. Like, I would literally be like, let's go inside. And honestly, my mind is blown right now about this, where you sit is where you get the discount thing. Cause I don't think Denver has gone there yet. I'm going to keep an eye out on that because I would be pissed off if I was in a restaurant and then they were like, oh, miss, actually, I'd be like, what? Excuse me? So you say, what's yeah, it? Who's so it?
The place is actually like Ivers in on the waterfront in Seattle, and they have happy hour in the bar, but not outside. And the entire time I was just like, wow, you are cute enough to pay an extra $1 for a beer, but wow.
No, I'm bad. I'm just going to leave it there. I wanted to talk about this next thing because it really, I think this is where I was like, you've got a fan for life. And you had mentioned on the panel at the Lola retreat that you were working some additional years, kind of taking into account your parents' number. And I was actually very moved by that. I know that a lot of people are in the position where they're very aware that their parents' retirement is not where it needs to be. I'm one of those people where I'm like, my mom's retirement, this is not good. There are certain things that I'm gearing up to focus on so that I can help kind of make sure that the money is there and that she has a happy retirement. And I want you to talk about why you decided to do that. I think that, especially as a person who's in the personal finance space, I've heard people say, that's not my issue, even if it's their parents, and be very vehement about not helping parents out. I think there's some cultural things going on with that. But likewise, I've heard other people be very vehement about, no, these are my parents. This is culturally what I would do. And this is how I feel about it. So if you could talk about, you know, deciding to do that, if they were or are aware that you've done this and what that whole decision was like for you.
Yeah. So I hit my number and I was like, wow, I've hit my number. But then shortly around the same time that I hit my number, I had to go home. My mom had surgery and I helped her recuperate. And that was the first time where it really hit me that, wow, you know, my parents are not immortal. And even though they've been giants and awesome in my life, like financially, they aren't necessarily in the strongest of positions. Thankfully, my mom did make a full recovery and my dad's doing fine health-wise. But that was the first time where I was like, wow, this is really an issue. And there could very well be a time when I need to go home and take care of them. And I don't want money to be an issue for them because I was fortunate enough to grow up where it never seemed like money was an issue for me. I've had the conversation with a lot of people, and I do think there's a large cultural aspect to it where I've had people tell me, well, you know, they're your parents, they're not your children. But I knew for me, I don't have money just to have it. Part of the reason I want to save money and be able to retire early is to be able, like I said earlier, have those connections, have those memories, have those experiences. And I would never be able to enjoy financial independence knowing that my parents were struggling. Mm-hmm. And my parents would never ask me for it. And they don't know that I'm doing it, but it was never optional to me. And so since I've been able to start my own law firm and have a little bit more autonomy with working, I enjoy it. So to me, the trade-off of working a few extra years to save money in case my parents need it was a no-brainer. And I think my parents would kill me if they knew I was doing it because they would never want to be a burden for me. But I know that there's a good chance that they won't necessarily have extra money. And I would hate for them to have a really reduced lifestyle because I wanted to walk away earlier. And again, I have no problem with other people who come to a different conclusion, but my parents have given me everything. And now that I'm Here in Seattle, I've been a big brother, big sister volunteer for the last 9 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
When you really look around, and yeah, I've been matched up with my little since she was 8 and she's now 17. Yeah. And so when you see the different types of backgrounds and parental exposure people have had, it really makes you, for me, it really made me grateful that I didn't have to deal with any of those issues. And I've had great parents. And so to me, the trade-off of working longer to make sure they're okay was something that I didn't even bat an eye at, because they literally worked for 35 years to make sure that I was okay, as well as my the rest of my brothers. So it was, I guess, a personal decision, but I didn't feel that it was optional. And yeah, they don't know that I'm doing it. They
wow.
would feel awful if they knew that I was, but if hopefully they don't even need it, but I would feel awful if they did and I wasn't able to help out.
So I have vaguely said stuff to my mom, but she has no idea how focused I am on it. And how concerned I am about her retirement. She's worked hard. And similar to you, she's worked hard my entire life to make sure that I had the best that I could have. And she had only so many resources. And while she's very young and healthy, I want to make sure that she gets to enjoy some of the things that she wasn't able to enjoy because she sacrificed. You know?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's really, really important to me. So I think on that note, that's really the end of the interview. And I think I would love for you to leave maybe a piece of advice for someone who's just at the beginning of their journey and they feel like it's something that is unattainable, like financial independence or even debt freedom is unattainable. What advice do you have for a person who's anxiously looking at the numbers? Maybe they're just, everything's a mess. They're stressed out. They may not necessarily be a huge high income earner, but they're like, you know what? I want to change my life, but this is a little intimidating.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I've been that person. So I would say two things. Number one, don't compare yourself to anyone. Don't get discouraged by, you know, you'll see a story pop up of person retires at 15 with $10 million. just don't compare yourself to anyone, and don't get discouraged if that's not your situation. And the second thing I would suggest is to not get overwhelmed. Just break it up into bite-sized pieces. For me, I had my little handwritten thermometer with $10,000 increments written. Figure out whatever that bite-sized chunk is for you. It can start with anything from paying off that one credit card to paying off all of your student loan debt to, you know, reaching FI. Just break it down into bite-sized bits and only look at the next goal, the next step. Don't look at the entire journey. Also, just keep track of what you're spending. Just figure out what the delta is between what you make and what you have to spend. And if that's not that much, that's fine. If it's a lot, save half. So just don't get discouraged. Figure out where you are. Take an accurate, realistic snapshot of where you are, and based on that information, put together your own plan. And it doesn't matter if that plan is financial independence in 10 years, being debt free in 10 years, just make it personal to you. That's why it's personal finance, and just start.
Everybody, you heard it here. Sylvia Hall, financially independent. She is, in addition to financially independent, a young woman of color. I feel like it's just so inspirational. She's a lawyer. She's all the things, people. And I just appreciate your story so much and am so thankful that you were able to share it with me. If people wanted to reach out to you, are you open to that? Or is that, you're like, look, I'm just sharing my story, people, and you got to, you know, do you.
No, absolutely. And I can give you my email. You've got my email address. You're more than welcome to give that out. It's all about, you know, being a resource for people. You know, even if it's something like I just need some encouragement because I also am six figures in debt, I can send back that email that says, no, trust me, I've been there. Yeah, so always willing to have people reach out to me.
And what's next?
Next, so my goal is to officially shut things down in about 3 years. We'll see what the tax plan looks like.
Oh, Lord.
For this year, because now that I'm technically a sole practitioner, I'm like, wait a minute, what are you guys doing now? But yeah, so next is retire officially for good in 3.5 years. And I just want to kind of backpack around the world via Airbnb or whatever is available at the time.
I can't wait to see the pictures. I'm so excited for you. I'm so appreciative. Again, everyone, don't forget to grab your Unapologetically Money Hungry Manifesto. I will share a link in the show notes. And just thank you, Sylvia, for being a guest today.
Thanks for having me.